Introducing touch-free payments from PayPal, a safe way for your customers to pay. Simply download the PayPal app and display your own unique QR code for your customers to scan. Whether you're a market seller,
I'll take two tomatoes and a cucumber,
poodle pamperer, piano tuner, or plumber, signing up to accept touch-free payments for your business is easy. Touch-free QR code payments. No seller fees until 2021. Not applicable to PayPal Here transactions. Other fees may apply. Shop safe with PayPal.
Welcome to So What's the Problem, in which you watch a movie from our youth and see just how problematic it may be by today's standards. I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Jen. Today we are discussing The Good Son, which was released in the US on September 24th, 1993, and the UK on 27th June, 1994. It was written by Ian McEwan and directed by Joseph Rubin. It stars Macaulay Culkin, Elijah Wood, David Morse, and other people.
Yeah, I didn't think I would write in anyone else's name there. I think that's the three you really know. The three I really know anyway. So what will happen is this. Jen and I have thought of three problems this movie has, three each, and they could be major problems, they could be silly, pointless ones. We'll take turns and go through them one at a time, and neither knows what the other one has picked. At the end, we'll both also have one positive thing to say about the movie, each. So, Jen, The Good Son. Mm-hmm. Do you have any history with the movie at all?
A little. I was both a huge Macaulay Culkin and huge Elijah Wood fan back in the day. I don't understand why Elijah Wood was not my boyfriend when I was in middle school, but that's a whole other issue. I loved them, and I loved myself a good thriller at the age of 12. I mean, this came out when I was 11, but I saw it when I was 12, and I really wanted to watch it. I remember renting it, and I would have been 12 then, and I thought it was real boring. I was disappointed. I never saw it again. Years ago, like maybe 7 or 8 years ago, Dylan and I were talking about the movie, and I was like, I want to watch that. And this is before everything was streaming, and it was like basically the only way I was going to get to watch it is if I purchased the DVD. So I bought the DVD and didn't actually watch it until this morning. It just sat on the shelf, and I was very excited to finally have an excuse to watch it.
Well, there you go. That's what this podcast is all about.
What is your history?
I too was a Macaulay Culkin fan. At the time, I didn't know who Elijah Wood was. I was going into this watching when I was a kid. Christ, how old was I then? It was 93, so I was a teenager. But I was going into having been a fan of Home Alone. And strangely, Jacob's Ladder, which was Macaulay Culkin's first R-rated movie. People say this is, but it wasn't. It was Jacob's Ladder, although he's in it briefly. I watched it back then, and I think I kind of liked it at the time. I liked the idea of it, and I liked the fact that it was Macaulay Culkin, like, he doesn't kill anyone, but Macaulay Culkin attempting to kill people. I don't think I watched it again until, like, maybe 10 years ago, and then yesterday. So, but I remember liking it, and I knew that it was one that we had to cover, because I do have things to say about it. So who's going first? It's usually the person who hosts it goes first with the problems, isn't it? I can't remember. It's been a week since we've done this.
I don't remember, because I just kind of do whatever you tell me, but I would like to go first just because I have a problem, like, literally from the first second.
Right. Jen, what is your first problem with this film?
The credits.
Yeah.
They use Comic Sans.
Yeah, that's part of my problem as well.
And obviously in 1993, they don't know that the way people are going to feel about Comic Sans, that it's like if you did your resume in Comic Sans, you wouldn't even get an interview. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, no one takes it seriously. It is so ridiculous. My husband was in the other room doing dishes, and I called him in to watch the credits because I was like, you will not believe what I'm looking at right here. And his theory was that it was that maybe it looked childlike. But it really just looks unprofessional.
Yeah. Like, I feel they could actually got a child to do the actual, you know, if they wanted to go that way.
I feel like I'm watching like a child's film when I watch the credits. So immediately I was off to a bad start because I was like, who does this? Like, this isn't even a comedy. This is like, maybe if it was a comedy, but like Comic Sans, really? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so frustrating.
Right. Well, that just leads nicely into my first problem then, which is the tone of the movie.
Okay.
Because, like you said, it's that the credits start off like a sort of whimsical comedy. The opening scene is like a drama. Mm-hmm. Once they meet Henry, it becomes the bad seed. But then there's also scenes throughout where it's like it's supposed to be thrilling and dramatic, and it's still quite silly. And I'm just like, the tone is all off right from the very beginning. Like you said, they use, you know, what is it, Comic Sans? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called. I'm not into my font knowledge. I'm not a font of knowledge. So I just think the tone is all over the place, because this is probably one of the weakest examples of an R-rated movie I've ever seen. There's nothing in here that justifies this movie to be R-rated. This could be PG-13. It makes me think they were maybe aiming for a PG-13.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was R. I just assumed it was PG-13. My theory is, knowing how prude the MPAA can be and how weird they can get about kid stuff, I'm going to guess it was because there are kids smoking and there's a killer child. Like, I have to guess it's something like that, because, yeah, he says fuck once. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't get it.
Yeah, that's what I think, though, that they were aiming for a PG-13.
Yeah.
But then the MPAA said, no, you've got kids smoking and you've got one kid who's very bad at killing people.
And if it makes sense to me, though, that it's rated R, because if it had been rated PG-13, I think I would have seen it in the theater.
Right, okay.
Like, I could have talked my mom into going to this with me.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably would have been bored in the cinema, so...
Yeah, and that's what we'll talk more about that later.
This is rated 18 in the UK. This has got the top end of the censorship ratings in the UK. And it was edited in the UK to get it an 18 for its video release, I think. I think it was uncut in the cinema, but when it hit video in 1995, I think, it was edited to cut out the car crash scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because the British censors back then hated anything that they think that can be copied by kids. So if this was a video at home, a kid could watch it at home, and then maybe they would make their own Mr. Highway and chuck him off onto a highway and cause a crash. That's the BBFC's thinking.
Well, apparently there was somebody in America, some kids who did that, and somebody died.
Yeah, but the violence in this is very slight. We don't see the dead dog. There's no blood in Henry's death, really. There's some, but it's washed away with the water. It's so tame. And I read the novelization of this.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
Like, I did.
I'll get into... Well, I was going to get into it later, but it's like, I was reading about that, and apparently the novelization was, like, better.
It's good. It sort of goes into Henry's thoughts a little bit more. And it posits that Henry was, like, born evil, and it gives you a little bit more sort of, like, the parents saying, oh, do you remember that weird thing that happened that time? And then they're thinking, oh, well, it couldn't have been Henry, kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they give Henry a bit more that he's done in the past, But it's also tamer because he doesn't even say "don't fuck with me" in it. He says "don't mess with me" in the novelization. So I don't know if the novelization was aimed at a younger audience, which is even weirder. Oh yeah, and at the end, Mark returns 1 year later, and they go and visit Henry's grave. That happens at the end of the book. So, anyway, what is your second problem?
So here's the thing.
Right.
And we can do this however you want. You can obviously cut this part out. But no.
Oh, here we go. Oh no.
No. Normally we go. You know what? You know, you, me, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like while my other two problems are different, they also, I feel like one segues into the other. Like, I don't know how to separate some stuff.
Okay.
So right. I was.
So Jen, what are your second and third problems?
Okay. Okay. The second problem is the casting.
That's my second problem.
Okay.
As well.
Okay. Well, this works out well then. Okay. So yeah. Here's the thing. When we record this podcast, you know, we record it on Sundays, and I usually watch the movie on Sunday morning. That's a really good time for me because, you know, Xander's not here. He's at my parents' house, and Dylan's usually still asleep. I have no obligations, so I could sit down and watch the movie. Plus, I have a shitty memory, and it's good if we're recording like right after I've watched the movie. But sometimes I'm pissed that I do this because I want to do a lot more research.
Yeah.
And this is one where I wish I had watched it earlier because there's a lot I'd like to look into. And one thing I would love to just spend a whole day reading about is Kit Culkin. The father of Macaulay Culkin and Quinn Culkin, who plays the sister. And Quinn Culkin in this movie looks like Macaulay Culkin with a wig.
Mm-hmm.
She looks that's the one of the only things I remembered about this movie from watching it when I was 12 was that his sister looks exactly like him, and it's creepy, like more so than Kieran or Rory, because they all look a lot alike. And then Rory, of course, plays his dead brother. He's just seen in a picture, but it's Rory Culkin.
Yeah, what kind of father does that, really? What kind of father casts a kid that has killed one of his siblings and tries to kill his other sibling? That's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, it's good casting, like, because it's always good to have people playing siblings, like, actually look like each other, but it is very morbid. The thing is, Kit Culkin was a child actor. He actually acted on Broadway. Worked with like Richard Burton and Laurence Olivier and people like that. Like it sounds like as a child he had some, you know, legitimate acting jobs in New York. But it's clear he's like a stereotypical stage parent that like he's a failed actor that is trying to live through his children. And this movie, you know, Ian McEwan wrote it, very respected writer. It was like he wrote it when Macaulay Culkin, he said he wrote it when Macaulay Culkin was 5. Like he wrote this years ago.
He wrote it in the '80s. Yeah. It was supposed to get made in 1988.
And he said that he never like at the time he didn't understand what Hollywood writers were complaining about all the time when they complained about how much it sucked to be a Hollywood writer. Cause everything was so perfect. The casting was perfect. The director was perfect. Everything was going really well. And then, they had already had like 70 people on the payroll. And then Kit Culkin got a hold of the script and decided he wanted his son, his oldest son, to be in it. He wanted, and I do understand this, like he wanted to show Macaulay's range. He wanted him to be doing something other than Kevin McAllister. Mm-hmm. So when they were signing contracts for Home Alone 2, like he's notorious for having asked for a lot. Like he was really into bargaining and trying to get as much as possible. And which even Macaulay did that a little, because Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood did their own stunts in this movie, which I watched some behind the scenes stuff, and it's very impressive because they had some scary shit to do in this movie.
There was some good stunt work at the end. Mm-hmm. And I won't lie.
Macaulay Culkin, apparently his condition for doing the stunt at the end was that they buy him a BB gun. So even he negotiated. But Kit Culkin, the condition for Macaulay Culkin to be in Home Alone 2 was that he gets to be in The Good Son. So they had already cast Jesse Bradford as Henry, and mm-hmm. Jesse Bradford from like Hackers and Bring It On and Swim Fan, and Mary Steenburgen as the mother, which I love Mary Steenburgen as a sad mom. She's so good at it.
That's, see, that I've written that down as one of my notes, that it would be a totally different movie if she was the mother in this. She would act for a start.
And they needed to make Home Alone 2. They needed that money. The studio did. So they went ahead and were like, okay. But Home Alone 2 and The Good Son were both winter movies. So this movie had to be pushed to a year after Home Alone 2 was made. So they lost Mary Steenburgen. Obviously, Jesse Bradford's not in it anymore. And then Michael Lehman, who was supposed to direct it, and he directed Heathers, so
yeah,
we love him. He dropped out because he was like, fuck this, you know, Kit Culkin's like, I don't want to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And so they got a director that was someone who was more likely to give in to Kit Culkin's demands. And they also had to shed a lot of the script, which is why I want to, like, all of this is my second and third problems, because my second problem is casting, and my third problem is this movie is fucking boring. Thought it was boring when I was 12, and I liked every movie I watched when I was 12, so that's a big deal. They cut out, like, they had somebody come in and change the script a lot. They cut out entire storylines from it. The other day when I looked to see how long this movie was, I saw it was an hour and 27 minutes. And I was like, well, cool, because that's not going to take too much of my time. But that's also, with a movie like this, that's a bad, like, it's either a bad sign or a good sign. It's like, either when a movie is under 90 minutes, it often is because the movie sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, maybe it was going to be a tightly packed movie.
Or it's a kids' movie. Some kids' movies are under an hour and a half.
But this is, good. But it isn't. It's rated R.
Exactly.
And so I was just like, wow, well, at least it'll be over fast. But this movie felt like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Not enough happened. It was boring. And the reason the casting is bad is, like, I know Macaulay Culkin can do more. Like, he was really good in Saved. You know, I've seen him in different things.
Yeah.
Over the years. But he was... I mean, I don't think he's great in this movie, but part of the problem is, and I understand his father didn't want him to get typecast, and so what I'm saying is completely going against that, which I always respect an actor not wanting to be typecast, but like, this movie doesn't work because Home Alone is too recent. Because what we are seeing is Kevin, it's not an older Kevin McAllister. We are seeing someone who is Kevin McAllister.
Yeah, because he just made Home Alone 2.
Yeah, and so he's, like, when he's being creepy and stuff, it's funny, because it's Kevin. Like, it's, if it had been Jesse Bradford, and I don't remember Homeward Bound very well, which I did see, like, that's, I think the earliest movie of his that I saw, but from what I know of Jesse Bradford, I think that he would have been a lot better in it.
Right. Well... That's actually my second problem, is Macaulay Culkin.
And he's trying. He's doing his best. His best just to get right for this movie.
He is. And it doesn't help that the poor boy is getting out-acted at every single turn by Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood was a brilliant child actor.
He was a really good child actor. He was brilliant, yeah. He was one of the best of that era. And Macaulay just can't live up to that. He can't follow that. It's like Macaulay's really good at comedy. That's his, that back then in the '90s, that was his strong point. Mm-hmm. And so I do like that he was trying to get away from something else, even though I doubt this was his choice. It was his dad's. But I think that I just think it was a misstep casting him.
if he had had more control over his career as a child, which some child actors do, I'm really curious what kind of movies he would have picked. Because, like, do you remember The Nutcracker?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it, though.
I never saw it either, which shows how not interesting it looked to me. Because, you know, back at that age, I was the kind of person that if I liked an actor, I wanted to see literally everything they were in. Yeah. And so if there were multiple Macaulay Culkin movies I had zero interest in.
Getting Even with Dad?
Okay, I did watch that.
Yeah,
because that's Ted Danson.
Yeah.
But no, there was that, what was it called? The Pagemaster? Is that right?
Pagemaster, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have any interest in that. I did watch Wish Kid, which was a Saturday morning cartoon. I watched a lot of the stuff, but I think that his dad made terrible choices. And a lot of those choices were him wanting to show his range. Like, the kid wasn't a dancer, but he put him in Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. And this, God, I just want to read more about him because the guy was a nightmare. And I'm honestly fascinated by stories of people like that who like always get what they want. I mean, I guess it's part of it is it's like a Trump-like figure, right? That like,
yeah,
he finds that he has power.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to try to use it to get whatever he possibly can. And poor Macaulay Culkin, like, I watched the behind-the-scenes featurette for this, and it's like, he and Elijah Wood are cute kids goofing off between takes, and, like, he always just seemed like a really nice kid.
Yeah, I do like Macaulay Culkin. I have a fondness for Macaulay Culkin. I've watched his stuff on, like, Cinemassacre with the, James Rolfe, and with, Red Letter Media and stuff like that, and he's turned himself around because obviously he had like a troubled period where he was an addict, and he's turned himself around, and that's the kind of thing I like to see. And now, even though he's not acting as much, although he's going to be in the next American Horror Story series.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
But he's not acting as much now, but, you know, he's got his own podcast network. He makes his own YouTube videos. He's doing his own thing. And that's good. I like that. And he's also, like, guesting on other people's things, which is good.
And he's friends with Lizzo.
Yeah.
That's just so... It's such an interesting pair of friends to me.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, the fact that this is so boring... Like me finding it boring at 12, I was a 12-year-old critic you could trust, I think, because at this age, I am so into this kind of movie. Like I read the novelization of Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Right.
Like I was into those kind of movies. You know, this is the early to mid 90s, so the TV movie of the week was really big at the time.
Yeah.
And I always watched those. I was a huge fan of those. And this, the theatrical thrillers like this, one of the things that always made them so disappointing is that if you are watching a movie like this that was released in the theater, especially if it's rated R, you expect it to be more exciting than the stuff on TV, because this very easily could have just been like an ABC TV movie of the week.
Yeah,
absolutely. They would just have to change like the language, and honestly, it's a pretty tame movie, so they wouldn't have had to change very much for TV.
No.
And if I'm watching a theatrical release with like big movie stars, which these were big child movie stars, it's got to be more interesting. And it just... It's not. It's such a bummer because I would love to read the novelization and I would love to read the original script.
Right. I don't know if I still have the novelization. It may be packed, stored away somewhere.
I need to see if I can find the original script because I would love to know what that's like.
Comcast Business gets you fast gig speed internet. And now ask how to get fast shipping with Amazon Business Prime Essentials. So you'll always be ready to bounce forward. Comcast Business. Offer ends 11/15/20. Restrictions apply. Requires qualifying Comcast Business service. New Amazon Business Prime Essential members only.
Introducing touch-free payments from PayPal, a safe way for your customers to pay. Simply download the PayPal app and display your own unique QR code for your customers to scan. Whether you're a market seller,
I'll take two tomatoes and a cucumber,
poodle pamperer, piano tuner, or plumber. Signing up to accept touch-free payments for your business is easy. Touch-free QR code payments. No seller fees until 2021. Not applicable to PayPal Here transactions. Other fees may apply. Shop safe with PayPal.
Yeah, I think that would probably... I think the original script is better. It has to be.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, going off... My second problem is Macaulay Culkin, but it's not his fault. But I just don't... There's no real build up to Henry. Mm-hmm. The first time you see him, he's wearing that scary sort of masks thing that he made himself. So right away, he's sort of creepy. And there's no real, oh my god, this seemingly innocent child is evil, like, reveal, because straight away he's like a wee creep. So it's just not very well written, it's not very well structured. It's like, and he, one of the very first things he asks Elijah Wood's character, Mark, the very first thing Henry asks Mark is, did you see your mum when she died? That's like, yeah, okay, we get it, he's creepy, but lead up to it more. Mm-hmm. You know? Because now, every time Henry's on screen, we're just expecting him to do or say something that's creepy. And there's no real build up to it. So... there's no suspense. I mean, I know we're going to watch a movie about a killer kid. Well, mm-hmm. An attempted killer kid. He's not very good at it, but...
He's killed.
Yeah, his baby brother. Wow. He held a baby underwater. Good for him.
Well, you know, not just anyone can kill a child.
No, I understand that, but I mean, like...
I hope.
He clearly has it in him. Right, that's fair enough, but he physically, he's like, that's the only one he manages to do is because the baby can't defend itself. He fails at killing his sister, he fails at killing his mum.
Well, that's only because Mark is there.
Like, yeah, Mark's the best.
If he definitely would have killed his mother. And God, watching that scene at first, I'm like, oh, this is so unrealistic how, you know, she's able to so easily climb up. Or so fast, it doesn't look easy. But then I'm just like, I was thinking about that thing where, like, you know, if a woman's child is stuck under a car, that she could, like, you know, lift the car up. And I'm like, okay, it's like that. And it looked so good. Like, them doing their own stunts, I don't know that they would let children do that today.
No, but that was, that impressed me back when I was a teenager, and it impressed me now is just how good that looks. Because they could have easily... There's, like, overhead shots where you can actually tell that it's the two kids that are hanging there. And it's not on a green screen or anything. It looks so real. And that is what I like about that.
It was so amazing. And yeah. I'll say this for the movie. Like, while... I have a theory that a thriller like this... the endings are generally pretty weak. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's hard to end. Like, I feel like if I'm watching... a thriller, as long as I enjoy, you know, the first two thirds of it, and then maybe like the first half of the final act, that's good enough for me, because the endings are usually pretty weak. And they're usually very abrupt, and that's kind of how this one is. It's like, you know, she picks the child to save, which is, I think, a very good ending, but then it's just like he's home by himself, because, like, these kids, it's the 90s, so they're allowed to run around everywhere on their own. Like, because at one point, Macaulay Culkin shows up at the hospital in the middle of the night, and she's not like, how did you get here?
Yeah.
And when he says he's going home, she's not like, let me drive you. Like, she's just going to let him walk home or whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, this is what, you know... Well, actually, I was going to say this is what childhood was like in the, like, the 80s and the 90s, but I think most parents wouldn't even let their kid get away with that. But, you know, it ends with him at home and he's just like, you know, I wonder, you know, if she could do it again, if she would have.
Didn't need that. We didn't need that voiceover. It should have ended with those two on the cliff and that was that.
It should have. And it also just like doesn't segue into the next scene very well. But
no.
I've been thinking about that for hours. And so when you're watching it, it is not a satisfying ending. But the fact that it stayed on my mind and I really have been thinking about it a lot, it makes it okay to me.
No, but I think the ending's satisfying. I think Henry Fonte's death and those two hugging on the cliff side, wherever the fuck they are. Those two hugging, I think that's the ending. I would be satisfied with that ending.
Yeah, I would too.
But if you think about it, right? Henry's dad has absolutely no clue that Henry is evil. So when they went back home and said, oh yeah, we had to kill Henry, I had to let Henry go because Henry was evil. Mm-hmm. The dad would be like, wait a minute. No, he wasn't. Because he had no evidence of it.
So earlier I sent you a screenshot of some IMDb trivia that I thought was stupid. Because there's this whole thing with IMDb trivia where people will, like, they'll make these big reaches that they think are interesting. And it's the kind of thing I think about where I'll be like, hey, you know, there are these people in this movie. You know, there were three people that were in three different Stephen King movies. That's interesting, or something like that. But it's not, it's interesting enough to think to yourself. It's not interesting enough to like put on the internet, I don't think. And so I'm going to read you another piece of trivia that, one, isn't trivia. And so it doesn't belong in here. But two is actually kind of interesting to me.
I think we should do it at like a regular slot in this podcast where Jen just reads IMDb trivia that she thinks is not trivia.
I always read the trivia and I always get angry about something, but there's usually interesting enough stuff in there that I always read it. But this is interesting, but it does not belong here, but I'm gonna read it to you.
Okay, all right.
There is a good chance that Mark could be sent to juvenile detention center after the events of the movie, as everyone, except Susan, has written him off as a nutcase due to Henry's manipulations. Yep. Furthermore, Susan could get into serious problems with her marriage the minute she tries to explain to her husband what happened to Henry. Also, even if Mark's name gets cleared and Susan's marriage escapes unscathed, she could end up gradually resenting him later on because by choosing the life of her husband's nephew over that of her remaining son, Susan destroyed any hope of rehabilitating her own flesh and blood. Okay, this doesn't belong in trivia because this is just speculation about like what would have happened after, and that's not trivia. But it is interesting. That's the thing that's kind of funny to me about these kind of movies is that, like, you know, it has the ending. It's like, oh, the evil kid's dead. You know, maybe not. Like, it's awful for everyone that, you know, this, especially his parents, that he had to die. But like, they don't have to worry about him anymore. Now they can get on with their lives. No. No, they're not going to be okay for a long time. And shit's really going to hit the fan once everybody finds out what happened. Mm-hmm. And it's like, a movie that I didn't really like that much, but I like the idea of, is The Other Guys.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing with that movie is like you have cops like in movies, they're big action stars and they go do all this cool stuff. But like there's paperwork.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that exciting because there's going to be, and I know cops, they hate doing paperwork.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
it's that kind of thing where it's like after this movie's over, it's, and how do you deal with like, you had three children and one child killed the other one and then you had to let him die. God, what's it going to be like for their daughter for the rest of her life?
Yeah, and also there's a scene where Henry grabs his sister by the ear, mm-hmm. by the ears, and hurts her, and then Mark defends her and grabs Henry, but she runs away shouting, they're fighting, but she doesn't say, oh, Henry was hurting me.
She's used to it.
There's one part of this like movie where I think Macaulay Culkin is good as Henry. There's one bit that actually I found quite chilling, and that is when the house is in darkness and Mark takes Connie away and Henry's left there himself and he's been plotting to kill everyone. But he's standing there with his flashlight and he's just like swinging it around in the dark.
Yeah.
And he's just like singing Camptown Races, whatever it's called. He's just singing that to himself. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's that. That's like quite creepy. But there's not enough of that. You can't just get like a big child actor to say fuck and to look like he's bored when he's actually supposed to be like calculating throughout the entire movie and make us think that he's scary. More of that, please. That was creepy and unsettling. So,
well, and it's so funny because I'm going to guess they thought that the don't fuck with me line was going to be like the big like, oh, he's so bad thing because the kid said fuck. But in that same scene, earlier in the scene, he says, your mom's maggot food.
Yeah.
That was way more disturbing to me.
There's the odd bit there when he just says a line and it's like, okay, I can see it, but it's just, there's not enough of it. And also, this movie has to have the worst psychiatrist ever in a movie, ever.
Oh my God. Yeah.
She is terrible, and she should be fired after this. Because Mark tries to tell her that Henry's evil, but she thinks he's talking about himself because, you know, she says, oh, you didn't let your mum die, you're not evil.
That made me wonder if there might have been an earlier scene that was cut out or something where he talks about that.
Yeah, I think there is in the novel. In the novelization, he does go and talk to her more.
You know, before DVDs, the novelization, and well, I say before DVDs, this DVD didn't even have deleted scenes or anything, but before DVDs, novelizations, and then when they release the shooting script of things, that's where you get your deleted scenes. There's a scene in Clueless that takes place in the bathroom that was cut out. Part of it's in the trailer, but the whole scene is actually in the novelization because they're working off the script.
Original script, yeah.
I know I said it before, but I need to find see if the script is on the internet somewhere because you know, the thing that sucks about being someone who's interested in finding out more about the movies I watch and, you know, reading trivia and stuff is that you learn about these movies that could have existed.
Yeah.
In business, things move quickly. You have to be ready to shift, pivot, adapt, then do it all over again. Comcast Business gives you fast, reliable internet on the nation's largest gig speed network. And now, ask how to get fast shipping with Amazon Business Prime Essentials. Wow, that was fast. So no matter what comes next, you can do more than bounce back. You can bounce forward. Offer ends 11/15/20. Restrictions apply. Requires qualifying Comcast Business Service. New Amazon Business Prime Essential members only.
I also think Elijah Wood might have been a more interesting Henry.
Yeah.
He could have done that.
I mean, he's still the best actor in the entire film. He is the one who gives a performance. He's not just standing there just saying his lines. See, at the end, he is... I'll give Wendy Crewson, I'll give her credit for the last scene. Mm-hmm. I think she's like, I believe that she is pondering whether or not to save her son.
Yeah.
But throughout the film, I just think she's quite dull and I don't think her heart's in it. But in that last scene, I believe that Mark is absolutely fucking terrified.
Yeah.
And that he thinks he's going to fall. Whereas Henry is just saying, Mom, I love you. In a monotone voice constantly. And it's like, I don't believe that. I know he's supposed to have no feelings, but even he should be terrified that he's about to die. And I don't get it from him, but I get it from Mark.
Well, and I don't know if he's, if this character's supposed to be a sociopath, but sociopaths, they don't feel certain emotions, but they know how to manipulate and they know how to pretend to have certain, like, it seems like he's, you know, supposed to be a sociopath. And I would think a sociopath would probably know better how to manipulate right there and how to sound. I mean, the kid's practicing his crying.
Yeah,
earlier.
That's true. Practicing his crying for his mom's funeral.
Oh my God.
Yeah. See, there's little nuggets in there that are actually really quite good. That if it was just... And I think that's where Ian McEwan comes from. That's part of, you know, Ian McEwan's parts. Because he's an established thriller writer, novel writer. But yeah. On Twitter a few years ago, Macaulay Culkin rated his own movies. Mm-hmm. But he omitted this one. And later that he claimed that he just forgot about it, but I very highly doubt that. I think things were just sort of shitty for him around mm-hmm. the filming of this with his parents. So I think he sort of blocked this out of his memory, which is a shame because I would really like to have heard him talk about it. Anyway, my third problem, and I've kind of already touched on this, but I think the dialogue is absolutely atrocious. I think there's too many "as you know" lines.
Mm-hmm.
Where for people who don't know, "as you know" is like "I am your brother," and "as your brother, I say this," and that is basically what happens in this film at the beginning, because Mark's uncle basically introduces himself to his own brother,
mm-hmm.
and it's like that's really bad. And Macaulay Culkin saying "don't fuck with me" that's a generic line. He could have said something else. I know a psychiatrist that will talk to Mark. Good, I just can't reach him. That's like, yeah. His dad says, I can't reach him. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, his mum just died 2 days ago. You want to maybe give him some breathing space and not just shove him in a fucking psychiatrist's chair? Like, straight
well,
away?
Well, in all fairness, if your parent has just died, like, that is probably a good thing. Maybe wait a week or so, but... Yeah, you're probably not going to be able to reach the kid like a couple days.
Yeah,
after.
Exactly. And also, he doesn't seem to give a fuck. His wife just died. He fucks off to go. Fair enough, it's to get, you know, a job to earn money for his son. But basically, this is just David Morse saying, "Oh, I'm only in 10 minutes of the movie. Great. Paycheck, thanks." That's it. And it's like, mm-hmm. I'm not getting anything from David Morse either that he actually gives a shit that his wife died. And I think there's a problem with the script and the direction.
So I couldn't remember when I started watching it. I couldn't remember if it was like one parent had died or both parents had died or whatever. Mm. I honestly think it would be more interesting if instead of his mom dying, which it seemed like something that he probably knew was coming, instead of his mom dying and his dad going off on like a business trip, I think it would have been more interesting if it was like his parents died suddenly in a car accident
yeah.
and he had to go live with his family. That's more interesting to me than him just spending winter break with them.
Yeah.
Like the idea that he could be like a replacement son,
yeah.
Like a permanent replacement son, that would be more interesting to me.
Because the way it is now, Mark's going to leave. David Morse is going to come back and take Mark away. So,
yeah.
And that family's in turmoil now. And the dad's not going to believe a single thing. The psychiatrist isn't going to believe a single thing because she thinks it was all Mark. And that's what I hate about this. It's like, even if the dad saw something in Henry and he worked it out at the end, give us that. I don't care about psychiatrist. Fuck her. I don't care about that character. I don't care if she found out. But it just bugs me that, I mean, and he's carrying Mark down the stairs, right? And Mark mm-hmm. is trying to explain everything to him. He shoves Mark into the room, shuts it, and then before he shuts the door, he says, "I'll let you out when you're ready to talk." And then he slams the door on him, and it's like, "Bitch, he was talking to you!" Right now, he's explaining everything, and he just fucking shut the door in his face. Oh, this angered me. Not as bad as other films that I've watched on this podcast. Anyway, what is your positive of this movie, Jen?
Oh God, I was so busy thinking about negatives. I'd have to go boring and say Elijah Wood, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like, I mean, obviously in a different world where they got to make this movie in like 1991 or 1988, like I think it probably would have been a much better film. Especially like I'm going to trust Michael Lehman, and
yeah.
nothing against the director of this. He did The Stepfather, which I love.
Well, yeah, Stepfather's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just Elijah Wood's like the good part of this movie. He's the
yeah.
good actor.
He is the best performance. He gives the best performance in this film. He certainly does. Everyone else seems bored out their skull, but Elijah Wood sells it, man. He really fucking sells it. I believe that kid has gone through some shit. by the end, when he's hanging off that cliff, he's petrified. It could be because maybe he is genuinely hanging off a cliff.
Yeah. God, and watching that featurette, the footage of them doing stunts and stuff, it is terrifying.
Yeah,
like I know they're on cables and stuff, but I admire those children because I'm a grown ass adult and I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah.
Not even for a BB gun.
No, it's I do like that stunt at the end. Right, my positive is this. I watched this on Blu-ray.
Ooh, fancy.
I think it is a gorgeous looking movie. I think whoever the cinematographer is, and I didn't take his name, does a brilliant job because it is beautiful to look at, especially in HD. It's that opening shot and the ending shot, because it's the same shot, where Mark is just like standing there and the rocks are in the desert. That is beautiful. There's some really nice sort of shots of the snow. The shot where they're driving to, they're on the road, him and his dad, that's beautiful. It's just a really amazing looking film. It's just a shame that all these good looking shots and all that are in this particular film. But yeah, that's my positive. I'm not going to say Elijah Wood, but I kind of figured you would. So I decided to say that I think it's a nice looking film. Oh, yeah, and the stunt work's good too.
Yeah, there's elements of this movie that are really good. And it's almost disappointing when you're watching a movie that looks good. And is like what just a well-made movie.
Yeah.
But then it's just like not a good movie. Like it's so disappointing. You almost would feel better if it looked like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it would justify you being bored throughout your skull. Anyway, let's just stop talking about this shit show of a movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad I rewatched it because it made me realise just how fucking stupid I was back then and how dumb my tastes were. So that's all we have time for. If you'd like to follow the podcast, it's at Drop Pilot Pod, which is my other podcast. If you want to go to shiftybench.co.uk, that's my website, has all my podcasts on there, including a new one that's coming up. And if you want to contact us, it's contact@shiftybench.co.uk. Where can the listeners find you, Jen?
I tweet from @pilotinspectors on Twitter. I have another podcast called Closer to Free, which is a Party of Five rewatch podcast. And the handle for that is @closertofreepod.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening, and we'll speak to you all next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Well, I was waiting on the bye, Jen. I was like, why is she not saying bye? Oh no, what's wrong?